Hello, everyone. Glad to be here today. Coming from Norway, this is our first attempt at a biochar study. Been looking at it in the last year. The information I'll present today is both coming from my master's project at the University of Life Sciences, and the second results are coming from Katrine Knoth-Dzarek, who is with Bioforsk. In Norway, why are we looking at biochar? Just a little bit of background on Norwegian agriculture for those who, most of you, are probably not aware so much about Norwegian agriculture. Northern Europe, boreal forests, young soils, about 3% of the landmass is agricultural, arable soils. Fertile soils. We're not expecting huge results from biochar agronomically, marginal returns. So we're looking at carbon sequestration, leaching. We have a problem in Northern Europe with eutrophication. And another question is then, because we aren't getting carbon payments, farmers aren't paid to store carbon, so we really need to look into the agronomic benefits first to see if the environmental benefits will come as a result of that. So the first one I'm presenting was a pot trial with perennial ryegrass, and the second was testing greenhouse gas flux. Firstly, the pot trial, testing biochar's effect on growth in ryegrass, nutrient reactions, interactions, and water holding capacity. The soil was a fluvial cambisol, a silty sand, in a greenhouse at 20 degrees for 16 hours, 15 degrees in the nighttime for 8 hours. Over a period of 3 months, cutting the grass 3 times. We treated the pots with control, 10% biochar volume and 30%. At 4 different nitrogen application rates, ammonium, phosphate. 240 kilograms nitrogen in this represents the standard application rate for farmers. With this type of grass being cut 3 times during the season. So 144 is 40% less nitrogen, 192 is 20%, and 288 is 20% extra fertilizer. Also wanted to see what happened when we gave it different watering rates. So the first month, we watered up to field capacity, and then in the following 2 months, we stressed the plants out, watering them once a week and once every 2 weeks. As I said, we're very early in biochar in Norway. We don't have any pyrolysis facilities. So as part of my master's project, I just made it myself using a two-barrel simple retort method. That's wheat straw there being stacked into an inner container and being turned upside down into the larger container where it is then heated by surrounding biomass. Temperatures are hard to control in such a situation, so you're looking at between 250 and 800-900 degrees. So it's hard to say, you know, what type of biochar this is given its pyrolysis conditions, and given the different batches. You're looking at about 25 batches. I just had to mix it as well as I could to come up with some sort of homogenic product. And then cooling it. And then you got the final biochar wheat straw product. Looking at the results on growth, this is an average over the 3 months of dry material. Here you see at the higher rates of application, there was no significant results, although the controls are peaking ahead there. And you're seeing that the controls are slightly, significantly ahead at 40% less nitrogen. Then looking at the leaf matter, then the nitrogen uptake, we're seeing that there was some significant reductions in nitrogen content in the leaf matter control here, and the 10% biochar in green and the 30% biochar in orange stripes in the first, second, and third months. So you can see there that the nitrogen is dwindling away in supply in the leaf matter over those 3 months. This is possibly due to a nitrogen immobilization or an absorption to the porous biochar particles. Looking at P, there wasn't a clear trend with phosphorus. In the second harvest there, you have 30% biochar going ahead. In the previous presentation, you saw that there were high concentration of phosphorus. Similarly in this, the biochar had twice the amount of available P compared to 100 grams of control soil. So the control pots versus the biochar amended pots, there was much more available phosphorus. In potassium, you can see here with control, 10% and 30%, there's significantly higher rates of uptake of potassium to leaf matter from the biochar amended pots. Once again, biochar had seven times more available potassium than compared to control soil. This would be interesting. The concentration of these elements in biochar could be an interesting application for concentrating the fertilizer value of agricultural residues and portioning them out over a volume of soil. Soil water holding capacity, volumetric water content. This is the first month here. The biochar had a significant effect on water holding capacity. And as we stress the plants out in the second and third month, you can see that the biochar held up and the control really hit the wall, the wilting point, especially in that third month. And the biochar amended were really able to hold the moisture a lot longer. This is an important application in dry areas. Moving on to the column experiment, Katrin's column experiment. She's looking at CO2 flux, N2O flux, leachate, and methane sink potential. I'll just present CO2 and N2O in this presentation. She treated the columns, which had no plants or no fertilizer added, with 0, 10, 50 and 100 tons of biochar. She also had a 50 tons of the hectare perlite treatment to see if the biochar is having a soil texture effect in respect to the nitrous oxide flux. CO2 was measured after 3 minutes, actually. That's incorrect, 3 seconds. It was incubation time of 109 days. And moisture content was kept between 30 and 60%. This here is the cumulative carbon loss, CO2, and then converted to carbon, grams carbon per meter squared. What I'd like you to see here is you've got the four treatments. This one here is the 100 tons. This is 50 tons. This is control in the middle here. And this is 10 tons biochar. We don't really know why the 10 tons had less CO2 flux than the control, given that the higher rates had a higher flux. You might think from this that the biochar is mineralizing faster, but if you consider the high amounts, we're talking about 100 tons of biochar, that's enormous amounts. Probably you'd never put that much on. So when you actually minus the control soil, the mineralization of carbon from the control soil, from the biochar treatments. This here is the cumulative carbon loss minus the control loss. This is the control losing 3% of its carbon as CO2 in carbon equivalent over 100 days. This is the 10-ton biochar. Doesn't really make sense that it's there, but that's just minusing the control. This is 50 tons to the hectare biochar, and that's 100 tons. So it was under 0.2% mineralization of the biochar carbon. So it's quite stable. Moving on to N2O flux. This is days here at the bottom, and you've got N2O flux here per hour, per meter squared. This one here was the control, the orange one. This is the perlite. This is the 10-ton biochar, 50-ton biochar, and 100-ton biochar. The error bars aren't here because it was a real mess, and I don't think you'd want to see that. You wouldn't be able to see anything, but there was a lot of variation in the N2O flux over the course of an hour. Three measurements were taken. But there were some significant effects here with 50 and 100 tons biochar in this initial spike period, the first 2 weeks of measurements. Concluding, biochar overall had a neutral effect on yield, except at lower rates of N fertilization. So it correlates to the previous speaker. We had an absorption or immobilization of N. So the timing of biochar is important. In Norway, with short growing seasons, we're probably looking at a incorporation in the fall, or a pre-treatment with some sort of liquid fertilizer. Seeing increased water holding capacity. Norway gets a lot of water, and so why would we need that? But there are some areas with sand soils which do really need that extra bit, especially in critical parts of the growing season in the summer. Biochar carbon degraded not to much extent in the first 100 days, and reduced N2O emissions. Biochar's effect appeared to be due to more than the textural effect from the perlite, as you could see in the previous graph. Just wanted to end on this. We talked in the previous lecture about the runoff from biochar. As you can see here, the incorporating it into the soil, you really get a close stabilization in the rhizosphere there. I didn't do any studies on the roots, but when I was finished with the experiment, I took a lot of photos, and I was just interested to observe the differences in the roots and how the root system really clung to the biochar. So it's interesting in perennial grass systems how much the biochar could actually stay in the soil. Thank you. Any questions?
We have time for a few questions.
Yes, I would believe so. I would, although I haven't been able to prove anything in this study. Well, it's actually not my study, but from the, there's definitely some reactions going on with the biochar and the nitrogen, and it's more than aeration as this would suggest. Yeah, okay.
Roughly
yeah. That's 30% was like 54 tons to the hectare. 10% was 16.7 tons.
Mass.
Oh, the mass of the soil? Yeah, we're talking about 5 kilograms of soil. I think about 160 grams of biochar. Yeah.
Mass.
Yeah.
Thank you. Speaker.